Rock.
Yeah! Yeah!
It's time for 92.9 The Game Tonight.
For the next hour, tune in or listen on the Odyssey app.
As we get you caught up with all things Atlanta sports and beyond.
We're going up tonight.
Turn up, bro. Like you say, just turn up and listen, you know?
That's the way to lead the show.
It's 92.9 The Game Tonight on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome in, Atlanta. It's Abe Gordon here on 92.9 The Game Tonight here on a Wednesday evening. Always interesting to be joining you fellow listeners here on a Wednesday because it's kind of a little bit of, obviously we call it hump day for a reason, right? A little bit of discussion of what we've seen this past sports weekend or the past couple of days, but certainly a look ahead to what's coming as well. And in the world of football, it is a couple of big things coming both in the college and pro games, but certainly coming off a massive weekend in college football. We're coming off of an Atlanta Falcons road victory in the NFC South. And look, I understand that the Panthers aren't very good. I'm not trying to argue in favor of them being any better than they are. I'm still going to take the road victory and be pretty darn happy with it. We were pretty close to getting what I was hoping to see, which is the entire fourth quarter with a double-digit lead. It took about midway through the fourth quarter before that happened. But in general, you got to be pleased with the victory. I was out there at Wicked Wolf with Andy Bunker, part of the watch party, and had a lot of fun there. But we left that game all saying the same thing. Zero sacks? Zero. Like, not like one. Like a full-on zero. Straight up none. And it's okay, right? Like, you try and justify it. They're still winning games. Maybe they'll figure it out. My concern is, what if they don't? Because they are still winning games. And I think it is important to note that, right? I also think it's fair to understand that in the playoffs, you're not going to win those games. And so there is still something this team has to address that is more significant than anything else. I know we talked about the run defense heading in, and you held Chuba Hubbard to, what, 94 yards? That was his lowest output, I believe, this season since he became RB1. I think you were okay. And part of that's maybe because in the fourth quarter they were throwing the ball. I think that was the point, right? When we talked about getting ahead, making him throw the ball, and then finding ways to sack the quarterback. Part of that was to also prevent the run defense from being a weakness, and that was okay. So a lot of Falcons talk coming your way tonight. Let me set the stage real quick before I get more into this Falcons thing in regards to the pass rush, because we are headed towards just a monumental, massive game between the Georgia Bulldogs and the Texas Longhorns. And I know we're really going to build towards that over the course of the week, but Chip Brown, an old friend of mine, of Horns 24/7. He's got the First Down with Chip Brown podcast, also a host for Texas Sports Unfiltered. He's going to join me at 8 o'clock. We're going to talk about this from the Texas side of things. You know, Texas got beat up a little bit. And I don't mean, you know, on the field physically they got manhandled. I mean, they've suffered a number of injuries. I'm interested to see how that could impact the Longhorns on Saturday. Also, maybe what are the spots that the Georgia Bulldogs can look to take advantage of. Hey, I also had a really cool opportunity this week to sit down with Rich Clark. He's the executive director of the College Football Playoff. So I asked him, I did my best to kind of think through the questions you guys would want to hear, right? Because I'm not going to talk to him about game specifics, but there is a whole stream of things we're wondering about the 12-team playoff. And so we'll get into that. He's going to join, again, this was a pre-recorded interview, but we're going to air it at 8:20. Jake Matthews and Raheem Morris joined Dukes and Bell today at Flowery Branch. We'll hear a little bit of what they had to say throughout the evening as well. The MLB postseason continues. I've got Fox Sports 1 on. We're ready to roll. In an hour, we will be ready to roll. But Game 3 of the NLCS, you've got the Mets back at home now hosting the Dodgers. And then the Yankees are out to a 2-0 lead in the ALCS. They are off for the evening. I've also got, and we got two TVs here in the 92.9 studios, the Kia studios here. We got, well, we have three TVs, but one hasn't worked in 5 years. So we have two TVs that are on. I got the NLCS on one, and I've got the Atlanta Hawks. And look, this is tonight is a game that was canceled a week ago due to the oncoming Hurricane Milton in South Florida and more towards the Tampa and Orlando areas. But the Atlanta Hawks are down in Miami, taking on the Miami Heat. And then they will wrap up their preseason tomorrow. So they're actually playing a back-to-back. I'm interested to see how they handle this from a physical perspective. Do some guys get the night off tomorrow? Some guys get the night off today? Does the whole team, like, I mean, it doesn't make a ton of sense in the preseason to, like, rest Trey but play Jaylen. Rest Rizashay but play Capel. Like, I would almost want, like, the full squad in and then the full squad out. And so I'm interested to see how they handle that. But I am going to be watching the Atlanta Hawks. And I'll say this. And Mike Conley kind of echoed this when he joined the Midday Show on Tuesday. Look, I don't know how good this team is going to be this year. I know I'm more excited than I should be based on what we've seen for now. I told you last week I was excited based on one performance from Rizashay. It fell down to earth a little bit in the second, but still pretty good overall. What, 5 of 11 shooting? He led the team in scoring. 8 rebounds in that one, 3 assists. So I'm looking forward to seeing more of Rizashay and think that Mike said it's just it felt more natural to him. He feels like he flows and fits in the game. And again, I don't want to misquote Mike Conti, but I'm pretty sure he went as far as to say he'd be surprised if Rizashay isn't starting for this team at some point. And that's a big compliment after seeing two preseason games. And so I think I'm not alone in the excitement for Zachary Rizashay. All right, back to the Atlanta Falcons. In a couple of moments here on 92.9 The Game tonight, we're going to talk about how the Falcons are viewed nationally because I was interested. Like, I know what we're saying here, and I know what the standings say, but, you know, every you know, website or publication, they've got their own power rankings. And I pulled up a bunch of them. I just wanted to see. And so we'll get into that in a couple of minutes. But I want to start the Falcons discussion today to talk about the – and it's not a fun discussion because they're riding a nice little win streak and they've taken care of the NFC South. They're 4-0 in the NFC. But it just feels like right now there's a limit as to how good this team can be because of the pass rush. And there's just no way around that. They're the worst team in the NFL in terms of sacking the opposing quarterback. And I just, it's not going to hold up in the playoffs. I already know it's not going to hold up in the playoffs. It's not. And so what can be done to actually get a pass rush? Find something. Like, is this on Terry Fontenot? Right? Everyone's talking about Max Crosby. Everyone's talking about Hassan Reddick. Like, I don't think those are overly realistic. But is there someone out there that is realistic? You know, the Tennessee Titans are probably another week from, like, either benching Will Levis, which should have already happened, or going the route of other teams and fire sale, right? And Arden Key is a guy that I brought up in the offseason that I wanted to take a look at. Didn't happen. I do wonder if maybe that's something they look at now. He's very good against the run, but also can get to the quarterback a little bit. But yeah, like, could Terry Fontenot make a trade? Or I'm sure there's some wonky free agent that they could sign to be like, oh, this guy was sitting out there because he wouldn't take a deal? All right, fine. So is there something Terry Fontenot can do? Is it on Jimmy Lake? And by the way, Jimmy Lake is going to be joining the Midday Show, Andy and Randy, at about 12:40, maybe 12:45 tomorrow. Look, they're going to ask him. I mean, as producer of that show, I'm as much as I can get them to actually listen to me, like, make them ask. Like, hey, man, you brought a lot of blitzes against Carolina. Guess what? They all got picked up. Either you're wildly unlucky that a bum team like the Panthers, missing two of their starting linemen, can pick up every blitz, or maybe you need to get more exotic than you are, more creative. And it's a tough discussion because you're not giving up big plays in the pass game. That's the thing. because of what you got on the back end, you're not giving up big plays in the pass game. Are you willing to risk that to sack the quarterback? I don't know if I would be. I don't know if I would be. Now, you're playing a team that can find big plays in the pass game on Sunday, right? If DK Metcalf gets over the top on you, maybe you do start to change that and say, well, we are giving up big plays. Maybe we do need to get more creative. But look, what can Jimmy Lake do as a defensive coordinator? And we kind of talked about this just here, but like, there's a suggestion that because you're not giving up big plays, teams are hesitating to look for a big play. What does that mean? It means the quarterbacks aren't holding on to the ball waiting for something to develop downfield. It means the ball's out the hand a little quicker. They're onto their second and third read or even the dump off almost immediately. Is there a line you can draw from that to not getting sacks? Yeah, I think so. But like, there's also going to be times where they are looking downfield and you need to convert those. So that's where we go. Either way, it's no secret. I'm not breaking some like crazy thing that no one's thought of. Like, oh, Abe is right. They do need to get a pass rush if they want to win in the play. You guys know that. You already know that. I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. But I'm just letting you know I'm frustrated too. And I want them to figure something out. And again, we'll ask Jimmy Lake tomorrow what they can do to get a pass rush, because worst in the NFL is not going to last. All right, when we come back, how are the Falcons viewed nationally? There's obviously flaws. We just talked about the biggest one. There's a couple other flaws, but they are 4-2. They are leading the NFC South. 5-2, sorry. 4-2. I don't know. What week is it? 4-2. They're so good that they're just winning games that we haven't even played yet. That's all I'm saying. But, yeah, how are they viewed nationally? I got the list right here. Let's go around and see and talk about that a little bit. It might surprise you where some of these spots have been. That's coming up next. It is 92.9 The Game tonight. Abe Gordon here in the Kia Studios on Sports Radio. 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app.
Pace yourselves. It's going to be a crazy night.
This is 92.9 The Game tonight.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back in. 92.9 The Game tonight. Abe Gordon here in the Kia Studios. Going to keep going, and I feel like I'm doing this all football season, but like we're just bouncing back between college and pro the whole show. And I know the Atlanta Hawks have an opener coming, and so we will start to slide into a little bit of, when it's appropriate, the NBA. I think we'll also slide into, and I'd kind of reserve it for outside the perimeter, which I'm still doing. We'll get into the MLB postseason a little bit. And I wouldn't do a segment on, like, the World Series, like, next week. But, like, I'll still talk about the playoffs as a quick note, highlight mention, just kind of let people know what's going on. I've really enjoyed. It's obviously a bummer that the Braves didn't last very long and that ride ended. I think we all kind of expected it to probably go about as it went. But the playoffs have actually been really fun as just a non-caring viewer to some extent. Just enjoying the games for what they are. And look, with what the ALCS has got going on, we're heading towards, and look, the Guardians aren't totally down and out, but we're either heading towards Dodgers-Yankees, which is what it would be an absolute dream for Major League Baseball, or we're going to get another Subway Series, which I know MLB isn't in love with it. They definitely prefer that over Mets-Guardians. So, but another Subway Series would be kind of cool as well, so we'll maybe see what's going on with the NLCS game three when we get to outside the perimeter. That's a little bit later. I'm not worried about football right now or baseball right now. I'm worried about football. And what I'm worried about is the Falcons and how are they viewed across the national landscape? And look, there are some very obvious flaws in the Falcons. I think the pass rush is the biggest of them. I think it's probably going to be the toughest one to address as well. I think you could say that you maybe solved a couple things in the run game, right? Did a great job against the Carolina Panthers. I think you've got an opportunity to back that up against the Seattle Seahawks. You know who was worse against the run than the Atlanta Falcons? Seattle Seahawks. And so an opportunity potentially there to get the run game going again. We kind of talked about the run game as like, hey, it should be better. It's a little bit of a weakness. Maybe they address that. The run defense, again, you held Chuba Hubbard to 94 yards. We all assume, I didn't technically look it up, that it was a career-long run for Andy Dalton. Like, I think he had previously had a 30-yarder with the Bengals, which is, well, you know what? What was Joe Burrow's run the other day? Because Dalton had the franchise record for the Bengals. Burrow's had to be 45.
Burrow's almost was like a 50-yarder.
That's got to be, maybe there's a longer record now. I don't know if someone else has done that, but I bet if Dalton had held the Bengals franchise record, he doesn't anymore.
Yeah, Burrow has it now at 47.
Yeah, 47. That was just the other night. Because I tried to look up very quickly Dalton's longest career rush, and all I could find was a 30-yarder for the Bengals that was the franchise record for a quarterback. So I'm guessing the other night against the Falcons is longer than that and his personal best. So, like, yeah, I mean, by the way, that almost was on a sack. I don't want to mention that, but that almost, there was almost a sack on that play. But look, the run defense and then the pass rush. Should we just kind of combine those things into the one Andy Dalton discussion? But those are the two kind of flaws, I think, that in general we talk about. But people here in Atlanta remain optimistic about the team, and I think as they should. But I also wondered, like, how are we viewed nationally? Because you got to remember, for us here in Atlanta, the Falcons are the one game we're watching every week, right? For the most part. And I know there's a doubleheader on some days and two games at once on some nights, and there's Thursday night football, Monday night football, Sunday night football. But you got to remember, for a lot of people nationally, the Falcons games are going to be buried in a group of 1 p.m. kickoffs. And even on last Sunday, there was three other 4 o'clock kickoffs. When it's not the Falcons-Bucks, are people really dialing it in to make sure not to miss Falcons-Panthers? Like, no. And so I kind of wondered, with that mindset, where people are viewing the Falcons nationally. Now, from a computer perspective, ESPN's Football Power Index, which takes in a bunch of team analytics and advanced number nonsense, that actually has the Falcons 15th. They're behind the Bucks, the Commanders, the Bears, the Bengals, among others. But again, I'm not sure that those numbers really hold. But I do want to look at how other individuals, NFL national insiders and columnists, maybe viewed the Atlanta Falcons. And I'll put it like this, because I don't want to spend time listing out every website's power rankings. We're not going to do that. Almost all of them have the top five in some order of Lions, Chiefs, Ravens, Vikings, Texans. And I don't have a problem with that. I really don't. So just know that, like, those teams are always going to be ahead of the Falcons, except for in one instance, and I'll get to what the USA Today has got. That might be my guy. I think Nate Davis maybe is rolling with USA Today. My guy put the Falcons a little bit higher than you might expect. But here we go. So ESPN has the Falcons at 12, and we talked about the five that are ahead of them. They're also got the Bills. By the way, this is before any trades took place. So this is Bills before Amari Cooper. This is going to be Jets before Davante Adams, if the Jets are on any list. By the way, the Jets aren't on any of these lists, so I don't even know why I said that. But this is Bills before Amari Cooper. So ESPN has the Falcons at 12th in their power rankings. Bills, Bucks, Packers, Commanders, 49ers, and Steelers. And look, I'm going to be honest, and I know Dom is here as well. He is a Steelers guy. I think that's just lazy. Like, I don't think if they matched up again right now, Steelers fans would be overly optimistic. Maybe we'll see one game from Russell Wilson and that changes. But I think you got to remember, that was a game in which the Falcons ran that odd pistol thing and the offense was not cooking. The Falcons held the Steelers to 18 points. You want to go through the games and see how many times they've scored 18 points since? Like, they would win that game now. Now, I'm not saying the Steelers aren't better either and stuff like that, but I don't know if I'd have the Steelers there right now. I find it tough to defend the Bucs right now, a team that the Atlanta Falcons beat, albeit in a home game. You can make your arguments there. And right now, the 49ers, like, even that's a discussion. That's a discussion as well. That's ESPN. CBS has the Falcons at 8. These are the teams they're ahead of. The Bears, the Bucks, the 49ers, and Commanders. So CBS looked at ESPN's power rankings and bloop, 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 just moved the Falcons up over some of those teams. NFL.com has the Falcons at 11. Behind the Bills, the Packers, the Commanders, the Bucks, and once again, the Steelers. Sporting News has the Falcons at 10, behind the Packers, Steelers, Bills, and Commanders. Pro Football Talk has the Falcons at 8. Again, the five that we're skipping are Lions, Chiefs, Ravens, Vikings, and Texans. Almost all of them have them as the top five in some order. Falcons at 8, according to Pro Football Talk. That's behind the Packers and the Commanders. And we'll talk about DC here in just a moment. But how about USA Today? They have the Falcons at number 5, behind the Chiefs, the Ravens, the Vikings, and the Lions. That's ahead of your Houston Texans. Now, I don't know if I'd be crazy enough to go that far, because I actually think that most of these are right. Like, those five are the five at this time. I'm not saying the Falcons couldn't line up against the Vikings and win a game. I'm saying I think it's fair and a much easier argument right now to say the Vikings, the Ravens, the Chiefs, the Lions, and the Texans are the top five. I'm okay with that. Not sure I'm in love with the Steelers as much as I've seen, or the Bucks. And the Commanders is interesting because I'm still – now, they took a big hit with John Allen going down, and so we'll see how that impacts their defensive line. I am interested a little bit in Jaden. The Jaden Daniels thing is so interesting to me because I just don't know if what he's doing now is what he'll do the whole season, and it's just that's how his career goes. But we've also seen plenty of quarterbacks who, like, once you get 4 good games under your belt, teams start to find a couple of trends and maybe make some adjustments. And so I'm very interested to see if there is like a slight setback. He's played so well, and not just against bums, like against Baltimore was very good.
That was the point that I was going to make, is that which is why I think it's sustainable, is the fact that he's done it against good
teams.
Well,
I thought 3 weeks ago, after he had like the where he was like 21 of 24 whatever
against the Bengals,
I was like, all right, he's probably going to fall back to earth. And he did not.
No.
He put up another consecutive game with 85% completion. Now, he didn't quite get 85% against the Ravens, but he had some big plays. He kept his team in the game, and he did not. I wouldn't say he struggled. I wouldn't say he was bad in that game. That's a problem for the Falcons, because that's one of those games late in the season, one of their last three, where at the start of the year, like, oh, we beat the Commanders. Now, they're 4-2. They're riding high. Dan Quinn's going to come into town. Yeah, we already lost to Arthur Smith, man. How many former coaches are we going to lose to this season? I guess there's only two, but yeah. So anyways, I think the question is, how are you viewing the Falcons right now, and how do you address the issues? Because right now, like, even without improving, are they still the best team in the NFC South? I think so. I think... that they're good enough to beat the Buccaneers in a rematch in Tampa. I'm not saying 100% they will. I think they're good enough to. I think maybe you find out a little bit more about your run game. And look, we're going to be honest here. You might be starting to see a lot more of Tyler Algier, with Bijan being used in smart situations. And not that he hands off the RB1 title to Algier, but I think you'll see a lot more likelihood of a hot hand. And I think that's what we've seen from Zach Robinson, is, all right, this guy is feeling it. He is getting what he needs. we'll go there, and I think we'll use Bijan. I think there's going to be games, by the way, and we saw it for the first time against Carolina. They used Bijan on some inside runs, too, and some of those worked for chunk plays. The thing about Bijan is, like, my goodness, it's like one shoestring tackle. It feels like every time. There are some times he just gets wrapped up in the backfield and he's never got a shot to move forward. But, man, it feels like there are like five or six plays a game that's a seven-yard run that are, I mean, inches or milliseconds away from being like a 54-yard gain. Yeah, like, they're very close to breaking one.
He's extremely unlucky because, like you said, like it happens like three or four times a game.
You can see him, too. Yeah. You're like, just one like more miss.
That close.
If they do figure some things out, could they compete for the NFC title? I mean, are they in a discussion with the Lions? We talked about the 49ers and the Vikings. Like, if they get even, like, close to an average pass rush, they will be. I'm not saying they will get an average pass rush, but if that were to happen, if they can figure out ways to start getting two sacks a game, which is, like, not even that good. Like, that's 34 sacks a season. That's not even that good. That's 34 sacks over a regular full season, not even, like, six games, five sacks. And you're taking, I mean, now you're at, like, 30 sack total, maybe less. But, yeah. And then there's just the get hot at the right time. And I think this offense, I don't know if they necessarily are the best offense in football. Can this offense get cooking at the right time? Now, I think that is something they could do, and that might be something they'll need to. Terry Fontenot, man, it might be up to you, though. Like, because what we have on the field ain't getting it done. It might be up to Terry. We'll see. He had a great offseason, in my opinion. We'll see if maybe he can have a great in-season as well. All right, when we come back, Atlanta Falcon offensive lineman Jake Matthews joined Dukes and Bell at Flowery Branch today. We'll hear what he had to say. Also, got some general thoughts on the Falcons offensive line. I've been very pleased with a couple of guys I had questions about. I'm happy. A little bit of the other way, though, on someone else. We'll talk to you about that on the other side. It's Abe Gordon in the Kia Studios on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Oh, come on.
Sports doesn't stop at night, and neither do we.
Let's get the show going, man.
This is 92.9 The Game tonight on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back in, 92.9 The Game tonight. Abe Gordon here, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, the Kia Studios. I'm reading the 92.9 The Game Twitter feed. Anthony Johnson wrote in and said, they did get a sack, but it was negated by penalty. Raheem admitted it. Yeah, I know, man. That means they got no sacks. Like, that's what negated by penalty means. It means they got no sacks. That to me is the same as, like, arguing that Lorenzo Carter had his hands on Andy Dalton before a run. Like, then it didn't happen. Yes, they were able to tackle the quarterback in the game one time with the ball still in his hands. Does that make you feel better? Like, if they had taken the sack yardage and not the penalty, would that have made us feel better? One sack? Like, would one sack have made you feel better more than none? Like, I mean, I get it a little bit. We don't say none. But, like, you were facing a team without two offensive linemen with a quarterback who was theoretically immobile, who set a new career rushing record, personal, and you didn't get him down. So, like, the one sack, look, and I'm not yelling at Anthony. He's right. Like, I get it. But, like, that doesn't make me feel any better. They got him once, and they chose to take the penalty yardage. I mean, okay, so they got no sacks. Even if they got one sack, it's one sack. That was a game you were supposed to ramp up three or four. And you got none. Or with an asterisk, one.
One with an asterisk.
Yeah, sure. Why not? And I appreciate Anthony listening closely, and we'll hear from Raheem because he did say that. Anthony's right. He did clarify, hey, we did get one. I chose to take the penalty yardage. Is that a fireable offense for Raheem Morris, costing his linemen stats every week?
Hey, man.
How dare he?
I'd be upset if I was a player. Let me get my stat, man.
A player getting his stats, there's only one discussion from Sunday, and that's the Clark Phillips talk. Because we need to have it. I'm sorry, man. We're scoring that six. We're scoring that six. I can guarantee you that. Good teammate. Super selfless. Good for him. Wouldn't be me.
Yep.
Wouldn't be me, bro.
Every time. Bro, never, never.
By the way, before we get into Jake Matthews, just in case I forget to say it, felt great for A.J. Terrell to get his first pick in a couple of seasons. I think he's a guy that's been caught by the numbers. I think he's also a guy that is being asked to deal with every team's number one receiver. Some guys get him. Some guys don't. I think it was nice to see him kind of put one in his category, though. So congrats to A.J. Terrell. I do not think it's going to be the last one we see this season. So good for him. All right, Jake Matthews sat down with Dukes and Bell earlier today live at Flowery Branch. Made their weekly trip up to the Falcons headquarters. They talked with the Falcons veteran left tackle, and they just kind of asked him, you've been doing this for a little while now. But how much fun are you having with an offense that's rolling like this Falcons one is?
It is fun, man. Anytime you can run the ball like that and finish out a game like that, that's hard to do in the NFL. And I think it just goes to show us as an offense, too. You look at the week before that, we throw the ball for 500 yards, and then we run for 200 before we had to take the knees at the end of the game. The more you can mix it up like that and prove that you can win in different ways, you're going to be in good shape. So we're definitely on the right track, you know.
And as a guy who's been here through the highs and the lows, how much fun is this season right now as things are rolling?
It's been winning, man. Winning's a special thing.
yeah.
It's been going well, but, man, just love the way Raheem is and what he's brought in the building and the character this team has and really the guys who make it up. It's a bunch of dudes that want to go out there and play well for each other and do things the right way. And, you know, I think we keep stacking and building off that. We're going to really like how this year goes.
You've been a part of a lot of great passing performances, right? Matt was here, obviously. But like in that game last or 2 weeks ago where we were throwing the ball around, at any point in the huddle, you're like, we're throwing it again? You know what I mean? Like Kirk comes in and calls a play. You're like, we're throwing it again?
You don't say that out loud. But no, man, you just – as an offensive lineman, you do what you're told. And you try to do your job, let those guys make plays. And if we win, it all works out. So any way we can win.
You know, and you said it's all about winning. Jake Matthews is with us. When things aren't going your way, it seems like we would be the Saints, or we would be Tampa Bay at the end of the game. Now we flip the script. How much of that is about what Kirk Cousins has brought to the table? We haven't talked to you since August. And Kirk's personality and the vibe he sets for this team.
Yeah, I think he has a huge part to play in that. Man, when we go out there for a two-minute drive or something like that, you can tell he's poised, he's ready to go, and we're going to move the ball. And that's really hard to do in this league against really good defenses. And he just keeps proving, you know, if we give him time, he's going to find those guys, and we're gonna win games. And you know, done it. Now we got to continue doing it. Means nothing if we don't keep doing it.
Jake, how have we been able to overcome these injuries, man? I mean, we had a game where we lost two starters, right? And we were running the ball that night pretty well, and then all of a sudden, you know, we had to come off of it. But how have we been able to maneuver that and talk about the guys that have stepped in when the starters have not been available?
Yeah, I guess I'll start with Storm Norton, who's our swing tackle.
Yeah.
He comes in when Caleb goes out, and he's a guy the last few years who's really proved that he can come in and fill that role and do a really good job. So that's really to be expected from him. But then you look at Ryan Neuzel, who got to play a little last year too. But this year, man, he's come in these last three games. I guess it's four when you include part of the Kansas City game, and done a really good job at center. Obviously hard to replace a guy like Drew Dahlman, who really been, you know, the spear, I guess, when it comes – the tip of the spear when it comes to, you know, our offensive line play and the way we want to communicate and ID stuff. But Neuzel, man, he's done a good job filling that role. And I think that's a testimony to his preparation and the way that he's – you know, he's sitting in those meetings understanding that, hey, there's a chance I'm going to go in. And it happened, and he's taking advantage of the opportunity, and he's playing really good football.
And the other thing is, as we're talking with Jake Matthews, guys live here at Flower Branch, I can't remember, maybe Lindstrom was to be the other guy, where Bergeron comes in and just plugs in, and from the time there was an injury, it just seemed like he fits, and he's your wingman, of course, over there on the left side, but it just seems like you guys have a really good thing going over there.
Yeah, definitely. I've been a big fan of his since, like you said, they plugged him in. A guy fits in the room really well. He gets it, works hard, does things the right way, and pretty funny dude.
A little
as
swag,
well.
Right?
So,
a little
swagger. Yeah, a little bit of that too. And he, I joke, he's only one of the few rookies that makes me laugh all the time. So he's not a rookie anymore. We gave him a lot of crap for that, but second year guy now. But he's been awesome to play with, and I only see him improving and getting better.
Dude, you've been doing this a while now, right? It's crazy. Like, we saw you drafted. With the right. boots, with the boots on,
came in boots, came yeah. in here as a rookie,
yep. And you know, you come from and you know, people know this. Your family, you come from a bloodline where guys just play a long time, yeah. right? I mean, honestly, how much longer, man? Like, seriously, have you thought about that? You're having so much fun. I'm just curious.
I am having a good time. That's a good question. I mean, I try not to think about it. I guess till the wheels fall off. I don't know. Well, I'm enjoying it. And,
yeah.
And yeah, I think it's a testimony to. Our family and I guess genetics and the good Lord has given us bodies that can do right. this for a long time. And,
right.
you know, I love doing it. Want to keep it going.
We had so much fun. We were up in Charlotte with a bunch of listeners. We took over a Hooters the week that you had your first child. And we're like, Arthur better send Falcon 1. We got to get Jake up here. Any difference the second time around being a daddy?
The second one was a lot more smooth. It was,
right.
no issues. And, I preferred the second one.
Right on.
Man, tell us what you're seeing in this Seattle defense, man. I mean, listen, T.J. Watt, Eagles defense, Chris Jones, right? All these cats we've seen. What do you see with Seattle, and what's going to be our challenge offensively going up against them this weekend?
Yeah, I think you made a good point. We've played some really good defenses this year, and that's the NFL. I mean, every week you're playing. And Carolina had a really good defense. So, just like this week, it's going to be a challenge again. I think one of the things that's impressive about them, I think they lead the league or up there around there in three and outs, just stopping drives immediately for offenses. And that's going to be a big test for us. We want to stay on the field and impose our will and wear defenses down as the game goes on so we can continue running the ball and mixing it up and all that stuff. They've got a lot of playmakers and guys on that side of the ball that we got to, you know, be on top of.
Bijan has a different style of running yep. than Tyler Allgeier. But they're both very productive. Is it? Did you block differently when you? I mean, the play is called, obviously. But are you doing anything differently from what you do down in and down out when you know it's going to Allgeier or it's going to Bijan?
You try not to. Really, it's a trust thing with the way the play is designed, where the ball wants to go, what hole we're trying to hit. You're trusting that guy is gonna be there and do it that way. But like you said, they both have a little different flair in the way they do it, and they're both extremely productive. So they make us look good a lot. So we're just trying to give them some space, you know. But no, I wouldn't. You're really not looking who's back there and changing your mindset of, hey, this play's trying to, you know, get outside. This one are trying to hit up the gut, stuff like that. Their job is to hit it where we're trying to go, and then after that, make their plays, and they both got a special way of doing it.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Atlanta Falcons offensive line I have been really happy with, and I'm still not going to sit here and tell you that they're a top five unit. I know there are some people in this city, and even nationally I've seen it, that believe the Atlanta Falcons are a top five offensive line in all of football. I don't know if I'm quite willing to say that because I don't think they do anything at like the highest level, right? Like they don't pass block at the highest level. I think they're pretty good. I mean, considering that Kirk Cousins has zero mobility coming off an injury, he hadn't been hit that much. A little bit, sure, but not crazy. And so, but they also, you know, they run the ball a little bit, but they're not a dominating run unit either. Look, besides that start against the Steelers and T.J. Watt, I think they've been pretty good, though, in the pass pro. I think Chris Lindstrom, if anything, has been a little bit disappointing, and it's unfair because he's at wildly high standards as well. Every once in a while, I see a guy get through. Jake Matthews has been pretty good. He'll give you a hold every once in a while, but I think he's been good. Even Caleb McGarry has been pretty strong. Very happy with Drew Dolman, which we had questions about coming into the season, and Matthew Bergeron, who was like, I don't even think about him anymore. Like, he's doing his thing, week in, week out, set, and ready to roll. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk to Chip Brown, Horns 24/7, Texas Sports Unfiltered, Georgia, traveling to Austin to take on the number one ranked Longhorns. How does Chip feel the Longhorns are ready for the challenge? They haven't really been challenged. I apologize if you think Michigan was a challenge. It wasn't. And so we'll see if they get challenged on Saturday. Chip Brown coming up next. It's Abe Gordon here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app.